Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Welcome to the podcast. We're recording again in New York. In a previous episode, we talked about the five things you should do as a children's lawyer. So today, we're going to talk about the five things you should not do. And Bill is going to kick it off with number five.
Number five, don't talk about abuse the first time you meet your client. It's kind of like maybe hard not to talk about it. The whole case is about the abuse. The kid is now, you are talking to this kid because of abuse. There's no other reason for you to be with this child. And yet it's something we are suggesting that you do not talk about it the first time you visit with them. And it's, imagine yourself in that situation. Would you even want to be asked that? So at some point, maybe depending on the litigation, depending on how things are going, yes, you might have to actually talk about that with your client, your child client, but definitely not at the first visit. And I know it raises a lot of concerns, like where in my time schedule is this going to work? But to give you an example of something I do, or have done to actually get rapport going, because once you get the rapport going, everything else will fall into place, I think. And you guys tell me if I'm wrong, but this is what I do. I have no hair, and I'm an old man who's very thin. And so, but yet I consider myself to be very cool. So
You are cool. That is not a fair description.
So I will.
Michael Stipe. Fair description.
So I walk in to visit a client. And yeah, I actually go to the client. I don't use a social worker. And I walk in, and I know this young child is looking at me like, oh, my God, there's an old man with no hair sitting down to talk to me. So I just acknowledge that. I say, I know you're wondering yourself, why is this old man, bald man here to talk to me? And I might try to break the ice that way. And so we're not talking about anything other than me, why is an old man talking to her or him? And I might even say, if that doesn't work, I might say, well, did you hear the Cardi B song? Which, of course, I haven't heard, but I know who Cardi B is. So I might say that. And then if they smile, I know I've got an in. And then I might ask, what did you do at school today? What's your favorite? You know, I like to do this, or I like this food, or, you know, something to get them to trust me and maybe never, ever, ever talking about the abuse and about the facts of the case. Of course, I do want to find out what they want, what their needs are, how they're being cared for, and talking all around the abuse. But the goal is to get them to trust me. The goal is to get them to have a rapport so I know truly, truly, truly what they're thinking and so they don't hide anything from me. Am I wrong?
No, I think it's kind of true. I think it's kind of the same thing to go in your first visit and ask them what they want the objective of the representation to be. Like, what do you want? Where do you want to go? You know, like if you haven't spent the time for them to sort of recognize who you are and what your role is, you're just going to be another person that's come to see them and saying, what do you want? I mean, you don't have any basis to jump right to that conclusion, I don't think.
You also don't know what they're, you know, how they're dealing with it, how they're coping. You don't know them well enough to make any assessment of how they're going to handle that conversation. I mean, a lot of things you said about your process of getting to know a kid, it kind of leads into our fourth one.
Yeah, Bill, you want to do that one?
Yeah, okay, yeah. For four is don't treat them differently because they were abused. I mean, I guess that's probably the best way to say it. I mean, don't approach them and go, oh my God, I need to be sensitive. I can't say certain words. Actually, you need to be yourself. You need to be completely who you are. Kids, I mean, remember yourself as a kid. You could read BS a mile away and know that they can. And they're looking for signs from you so they can say to themselves, here's another one who's going to let me down. So you just so don't treat them differently. Just treat them like someone you've met and you want to get to know them and you want them to know you. And just, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, no, I think that's important. I think that relationship, I see that a lot with kids, with my clients, is they're moving through their life and they're trying to fit in and be normal and in their way overcome what they've been through by, you know, not dwelling on it every single day. With and
like for me, what comes to my mind as you were saying that is, like, I've represented kids who've been sexually abused, and of course that's a big deal, and you want to make sure they get therapy and treatment and support. But sometimes, a lot of times, I work that on the side, and I don't even talk to them about it. And I may want to know how things are going, if they have any concerns. But what I really want to be able to do with them is, when I see them, is get them to feel like, okay, they, despite that history, they are just a regular kid. And, you know, they're like, maybe they want to play basketball, or they want to sing in the choir. Because of that, I'm going to make sure that happens, even though it's not really my job. Maybe I can get a social worker to do it, but I'm going to hook them up so that they can feel that they're not different. Because if our goal is really to ensure these children are emotionally stable and can really help themselves, we have to lead them that way and not lead them like they are the victim, a person that needs special handling, because really they aren't.
No.
Sounds awful, and right. I could get back, you know, yelled at for what I
No,
said,
life is not going to handle them with care, because they don't have a label on them that says, I was a foster child or I am a foster child. Kids have, they feel different though, right, Jim? I mean,
they feel different. They're going through a different experience, but the fact is, they're going to go into classrooms and be asked to draw the family tree. And the teacher's not going to be sensitive to the fact that there's a child in this classroom that has no family to draw a tree for. So you are kind of a normalizing influence in them, is that you know their story. But you've got to treat them normal as an authentic person, because like you were saying, Belle, authenticity is something they sniff out from 8 years old to 18 years old.
But the word normal you use, right? I mean, it's interesting. I think you have a client who uses the word normal, and has, she has a boyfriend, and I think you asked her, did you meet him at the group home? And she said, no, he doesn't live here. He's normal, not like me.
Yeah, normalcy is key for the older kids in foster care. It's almost a secondary trauma of feeling abnormal. It's something that they crave, and it's got to start with the way people treat them. That's all they want, is to be treated normal.
All right, John, can you give us number three?
Yes. Number three on our list of things you should not do as a children's lawyer: do not create the impression that because they have an attorney, they get to call all the shots. The kids hear things a different way. Kids, they feel powerless, obviously, and then they meet you, and they suddenly, for the first time in their life, they have their own attorney, and they kind of that, and they think that, wow, okay, now I can maybe I can get things done. But you need to explain your role to them very carefully, and you'll hear us use this analogy a lot, I think, in this podcast series. Is, you know, the other professional with whom they probably have had dealings, and to give it some context for them, is a doctor, their pediatrician. They've had some context for dealing with a pediatrician, right? They've got something wrong with them when they're sick, and they go and they tell the doctor what is wrong, and they give guidance to the doctor, but it's the doctor who charts the course to taking care of the problem. And it's sort of important to establish that relationship. And what I see time and again is that, unlike a doctor or a pediatrician, you hear the conversation about children's lawyers being, well, we're something that kids get to point and shoot. But my point is, to a client, is, you know, you are a child client, and you are not by law allowed to drive a car or own a gun or join the army, because we don't trust you with things that you could point and shoot at people or drive at people. And I'm a powerful instrument in your hands, and you don't get to point me and shoot me. I am like a doctor. I'm a professional, paid professional. I'm here for my expertise and to help you solve your problem. This is important, because I can't tell you how many times I've gone out and talked to kids and walked away thinking that went well, and then the phone rings the next morning or later that night, and it's the group home director or the foster parent, and they're like, wow, what did you say to this kid? Because they are off the chain. They don't have to do anything now because they said, you said they're going home next week, so they're done with us and done following our rules. I'm like, wow, I said nothing of the sort. And so you have to really be careful that you're cognizant of what they're hearing, and also that they are not in the driver's seat by themselves, because they don't have a license to drive. They're not old enough to drive.
Well, I think it goes towards setting unrealistic expectations too. So, I mean, every kid has seen lawyers on TV, and the lawyer swoops in, and you know, they get a powerful lawyer, and then everything goes their way. And so I think, to your point, you may not say anything like that, but they may still interpret the fact that now that they have their person. And you know, I think a lot of lawyers want to come in and save the day. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I think recognizing who you're dealing with and how you convey your role is really critical, because, you know, even if they could point and shoot you, it still doesn't mean that that is the result that will happen
right
in the case.
And I think you have to lay on the disclaimers. I mean, it doesn't. Some kids are only going to hear what they want to hear and take away what they want to see happen, and maybe even use you and your visit and what you said to their advantage, maybe, or something. But I lay on disclaimers after I say, we're going to try and get this for you, but understand this. This is what we're up against. The judge gets to decide. It's going to take time. How much time? I give them specifics so they can't, you know, shrink 3 months to 3 days. It's just real important that you understand every kid has a different, based on their age and where they're at developmentally, a different sense of time, and they're hearing your words differently than an otherwise competent adult would. You have to remember that.
I think it comes to this whole discussion, you know, about the five things you should not do, is it seems like the overall theme is being normal, just treating kids normally. And you would probably never say to someone, you're going to call all the shots. You know what I mean? It just doesn't seem normal, right? So if we're treating them normally, we need to be not have any fear in talking with our clients, say no, truly advising them like we would advise an adult, despite how sorry we feel for them inside and how painful it must be. We understand it must be for them. We can't promise them the world. We have to be realistic. And in the long run, I found that the kids appreciate that more. It's something they might not have ever learned either. And I think it's wise.
Excellent point. John, while you're at it, can you give us number two?
Yeah, and this really almost could have been number one. Do not react to what your client says without pausing to hear what they are really trying to tell you. When kids say things to you, you can't automatically take it at face value. You have to sit and think, okay, what is the story here? The classic example that I see a lot of new attorneys fall into is if a kid says, I'm not happy here. A kid says to you, I want to go home. That's the classic one. A kid wants to go home to the abusive relationship, right? And that's a big issue in states where kids don't have attorneys. You know, oh, the attorney's going to have to advocate for the kid to go back to an abusive relationship. The thing there, what you need to do is remember, a big part of our job is counsel and advice, and a big part of our job is listening. And that's a big part of counsel and advice, is not just us talking to the kids. There's a listening component there, and it's careful listening when you're dealing with children at different ages and different stages. So if a kid says to you, I want to go home, you got to look at where they're at and say, well, you know, maybe what they're telling me is, I'm not happy here. I'm in a strange place. I don't get to see my siblings. I don't get to see my parents enough. So maybe what you do is you advocate for a change of placement and you move them to a better foster home. I've seen that change a kid's position on whether or not they want to go home. Or you put them with some extended family, an aunt, uncle, a grandparent, and that I have seen that change a kid's position on whether or not they want to go home to a clearly dangerous situation. Whereas, you know, if you just take what they tell you on a Tuesday and you go out and react to it by filing something in the court on Wednesday, you're really doing them a disservice, because you're not representing them with their age and their developmental capacity in mind. You have to always be listening with those ears on, with that filter.
Well, I mean, even with an adult client, if they tell you, you know, the direction they want you to go, you still need to understand why, and that, you know, you got to have more details than just which direction do I go here. And I think that that's kind of getting back to the whole time crunch issue. That's a critical moment where you've got to take the time, and you really have to get to why it is, you know, what it is that's asking questions about the current placement, and what do you not like about here might get to some of the points that you're making, that maybe it is just something they don't like about the current home. But it's another level of engaging with them and not just taking everything at face value, because then you're really not counseling them. You're just, like, again, pointing and shooting. You're taking it and going out and doing it without really understanding the underlying feelings and everything that leads to that. All right. Well, Jim, you want to give us number one?
Yeah, let's talk about the number one thing we think for today that you should not do as a child's attorney, and that is make a promise you cannot keep. That's a dangerous thing to do for the relationship. Remember, you're going to go out and see a client, and just being an adult and having a sad child in front of you, you're going to want to deliver for that child. It's kind of why you got into this field, probably. You're going to want to, you know, be the hero and save the day and come up with a solution, or at least say something to lift their spirits, right? Don't do it. Don't say it. If they have to be sad, just try and get them in the present. Talk about, kids are good at staying in the present. Try to get them back in the present. But don't make the promise about the future that you can't keep. I had a client say to me recently, and quite painfully, you know, you always say things are going to work out for me, and they never do. And I realized I have a credibility problem with this client. It's a strange reaction to a statement like that. But as a lawyer, I analyzed it really quickly. Like, I've lost her. I've lost her trust as an attorney. And, you know, and I can see why. And I did it without thinking. And I realized she's absolutely right. I've done that. I have said repeatedly to her positive things that were meaningless, that were said to make me feel better, trying to make her feel better. But it was my knee-jerk reaction to a sad child in front of me. Things are going to be okay. We're going to find that home that you're thinking about. This home study is going to get approved, and you're going to move out of this system, and it's going to work out. And I'm thinking back, looking now, like, oh boy, why did I go there and raise her expectations when I did not know that that was to be true?
But you did. You were doing something. You were just, I mean, I see why you said that.
It's a human reaction.
Yeah, and you're just trying to. It's that part of you that wants them to look at a future. I mean, I get it. I would probably say the same thing. And I'm, you know, for you to say that she was upset with that, it just strikes me as so interesting, because you really, and then I think you gave the solution, is that stop thinking about yourself. It's not about you. It's not about how you feel. Mm-hmm. It's about how the child feels. And maybe you were thinking about yourself. That's true. It's a good point.
And it's a, what I did was no problem in a human relationship, but this is a lawyer-client relationship. Yeah. You know, as a regular relationship, that's a fine thing, what I did. I tried to lift your spirits, and it didn't work out, sorry. But my job as her lawyer is to give her advice and counsel that's rooted in reality and what I know is going to happen. And I departed from that at some point. Just a human reaction.
I think you thought you were... I can't imagine it was that calculated.
No, it wasn't.
What I'm trying to say is that I think everyone would do what you did. Mm-hmm. You know? It just makes sense to do it. But at the same time, it's bringing our own anxiety about the situation into the equation, and that's the mistake.
That's where
you brought yourself in.
Yeah.
And sadly, we can't do that.
Well, I think, though, it really has to do with what you control and what you don't. So you can say, I'm going to do everything I can to get you home, or this is what I'm going to do to try to get you there. I think you can raise their spirits in the same way, but not say, you know, not do. And again, like, I'm a very optimistic person. And so I'm sure I did the same thing, but I do think just thinking about before you say what sort of give any optimism, you think about it in terms of what can I do. Back to our make a promise you can keep. I'm going to fight to get you back here. And then you do that. is not the same as I'm going to get you back here.
Right.
So I don't know, but they may not remember it that way anyway. But I think that I think the perspective of staying positive, but not optimistic for the sake of making yourself feel better, like we all do.
And there's another side to this that I just came to mind, and so I want to say it. Like I've heard caseworkers, or like a client will tell me that a caseworker says, "Well, she or he asked me, what do I want to be? Well, I want to play football. So you know, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play football, pro, meaning pro football or college ball." And I'm thinking, does she or this caseworker know that you are not playing ball in high school? I don't know, but I want to. I'm going to be a pro player. You know what I mean? Even there, maybe when we hear that that's being promised by other people, we need to step in and treat them normally.
At least say step one is, well, if you want to play in pro, we better get you on the high school team, or we better, yeah, you know.
I mean, have you ever thrown a football?
Right.
Even.
My son's,
I mean,
like,
I've
that.
Had that.
My son thinks he's going to play in the NBA, and he basically plays in the church league, right?
You know, right.
Like, you know, and, I mean, again, like I think treating them normally is just like, well, if that's something you really want to do, then the next step for you is you better get playing now. You don't have to crush it. But I think
I thought we were going to play college ball, and we tried to walk on the Florida State basketball team, Florida State University.
How'd
didn't
that go
well. It was kind of like standing on the interstate at rush hour. We were basically at midcourt, and we'd try to move three steps in one direction, and then the ball would be going in the opposite direction. And we said, okay, the game's a little faster at this level. I think we're done with basketball.
You guys are short.
We are short. By NBA standards, we are short.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time. You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.